Blog Talk Radio.
Another episode of Empowerment 365 is 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's the NAAEA Community Conversations Part 7 with our good friend, Brother George, what slavery did to us. And today we're going to talk about the impact of the economic collapse, Black Wall Street, the roaring 20s, and a lot of other things. So first we'll start with the NAAEA, and of course you already know if you've been listening, and we've had a wonderful series that the NAAEA is developed and created to ensure that the needs of the African American community is met through the development of programs and services that educate, motivate, inspire, and empower us to do what we need to do to take care of ourselves. We're living in a country where things are changing rapidly. I think we need to look at ourselves and we need to go to work in these five areas. Let's get together on politics. Let's have a political program and a political agenda, economics and an economic agenda, money management, understanding capitalism. That's right. Understanding the importance of athletics. And in that field, we're talking about health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. You got to take care of your body and your mind, right? So we're talking about mental health because your mental health is your mental wealth. And also, we're talking about culture and the importance of culture and how that plays a great role in developing our communities and our children. And lastly, education. It's a comprehensive education, right? Learning what we need to do to be more effective and to be able to compete in this society and also stand for what our ancestors believe in. That's number one, love for self and kind. All right, so I'm going to bring in my good friend, Brother George, to the show, and we'll get started with part 7. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you for another invitation to speak to the people and try to share a little bit of information.
I appreciate that. So we have gotten to a critical juncture here. We've gone through being enslaved, and we've gotten out of slavery, and now we're experiencing some sort of freedom, but we know there are a lot of other things going on during this period of time. So let's start with the impact of Willie Lynch, and then we'll go into a wonderful, wonderful Black Wall Street.
Well, the first thing I would like to do is address Willie Lynch again. The Willie Lynch syndrome is something that we're really going to have to wrestle with for quite some time. And I really don't want our people to be offended by what I say, because the Willie Lynch thing, that's what it's designed to do. But the only way we're going to work with this thing is to understand what it is that's going on with us. Now, today I'm going to speak about one of the effects that Willie Lynch has on our Black women. Now, I'm going to take from this particular passage when he says, by her being alone, left alone, unprotected, with the male image destroyed, the ordeal caused her to move from a psychological dependent state to a frozen independent state. Meaning that at one time, our women could rely on us to protect them and to protect our children. And once that was taken away, we really didn't know what to do, and she didn't know what to do. Now, I'm going to read a few comments from the brother that wrote this book, Brother Mark Sims. Black women have some serious problems, and we must also blame the root of those problems on Willie Lynch. The modern-day sister will have to confront the reality of how Mr. Lynch has successfully divided the black man from the black woman. During slavery, an African male slave could be killed for standing up to the white man. Today, an African American man will suffer serious consequences for standing up to the institutions of the United States. The racist institutions of the United States of America are consistently dividing black women and black men. Racism in the United States is a historical and modern day reality. Yes, even in our high-tech world, there is a continuous effort to keep African-American women and men at odds with each other. Unfortunately, African-American women easily fall for the trickery because they do not fully understand the power of the divide and conquer tactic. Black women know they have to look out for themselves, but they also must understand most black men are victims of white supremacy. Divide and conquer is the oldest game in the book of tricks. This is a reality African-American women should not go through life denying. Relationships with their fathers, brothers, uncles, and any other black man that has been affected by American racism. There are a lot of black women who have issues, and the root cause of some of their issues is the result of a poor or non-existent relationship with their fathers. Now, I'm going to move into the Black Wall Street. The Black Wall Street was an economic district that was put together by black people in Tulsa, Oklahoma. What happened was back in the late 1800s, there was a land grabbing in Oklahoma, and you know they called Oklahoma the Sooners, and you think of the Sooners with covered wagons and things of this nature. And so there also was some land that black people grabbed during that time. And some of the land that we grabbed was land that was undesirable, that they really didn't want, that was rocky and stuff like that. So we had to do a huge amount of work just to get the land to be workable. Now, what happened was they ended up giving us this rocky land, and when we started clearing the land and digging out the rocks and all of that, lo and behold, the land was full of oil. So that meant that we had all this oil, and so the oil business catapulted our African American ancestors in Tulsa, Oklahoma, into a financial district. Now, the two men who originally started that was Ottawa W. Gurley, and he's also known as O.W. He was a black educator, he was an entrepreneur, and he was a landowner. And he was born, you know, to former slaves. Now, his partner was a brother by the name of John the Baptist Stratford, his nickname, also known as J.B. So they back then would rather go by their nicknames, which was, you know, O.W. and J.B., because white men used to call black men by their first names to disrespect them. Because usually when you call a man by his surname, that was respect. Like by calling someone Mr. Brown or Mr. Jones, that would imply respect. Now, O.W. and J.B., they learned to work together, but they really was kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum with different issues. For one was very high on Booker T. Washington, which I talked about last week, and the other was very high on W.E.B. Du Bois. So now, if you know what those two stood for, one stood for, like, basically the trades and industry, and the other stood for intellectual, you know, accountants and doctors and lawyers and so forth. So they disagreed with on that topic, but at the same time, they also understood that in order for the Black Wall Street to be successful, they were going to need both. And so that's the way that they operated. Now, the one that coined the phrase the Black Wall Street was actually Booker T. Washington, because every time he would come to Tulsa, he would see so much business enterprise going on that he just said, "Yeah, I'm in the Black Wall Street right now." Now, one of the things that O.W. and J.B. and the brothers and sisters of Black Wall Street, they didn't tolerate a lot of racist actions from white people. And these injustices affirm that O.W. and J.B.'s decision to establish the black-centric community where black men and women were shielded from racial hostilities. If white people made threatening racist remarks, Greenwood's black residents often responded aggressively. For example, in 1909, J.B., now this is the pastor, was walking along Greenwood Avenue when a white delivery guy uttered a racial slur. Promptly, J.B. threw the guy on the ground, straddled him, and punched him until he was bloody, and he was charged, you know, criminally, but ultimately he was acquitted. In other words, they had enough political power that he could get away with beating that white guy up for calling him whatever name he called him and get away with it. So they had political power. Now, the Black Wall Street was, as I said, was an economic juggernaut, you know, for lack of a better word. And so what happened was the whites that were around the Black Wall Street who lived on the south side, because the Black Wall Street was on the north side of Tulsa, and on the south side of Tulsa was the white community. And so when they got jealous because they seen that the blacks that were running Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, which is called the Gap, where you get the term the Gap Band from, they were very prosperous. And the people, our people, were living good. We were making plenty of money. But a lot of this came as a result of they didn't want us, you know, through segregation. They didn't want us to be a part of their society. So they said, well, if we just leave them by themselves, all they're going to do is struggle and fail. So let's just do that. And so when they left us by ourselves, it turned out the other way, because the Black Wall Street was not the only financial district that we had in this country. There were other ones in this country also. One was Rosewood. However, there was an incident that happened that gave the whites the opportunity to do what they wanted to do anyway. There was a shoe black. They called them shoe blacks back then, but today you would call them a person that shines shoes. And so back then, that was a pretty good trade. You made pretty good money shining shoes back then, because everybody got their shoes shined. And so the guy's name was Dick Rowland, Richard Dick Rowland. And what happened was he was getting off from work, and he worked in a building, and probably was an office building, because that's where a lot of people with leather shoes would be. And so he, back then they had an elevator operator that would open and close the doors and operate the elevator. And this was a white female. So he went to step into the elevator, and sometimes the elevator didn't level off back then. And it probably was the elevator operator's fault that the elevator was slightly not level. And so he went to step into the elevator, and he tripped. And when he tripped, he fell into the operator. And so she screamed, you know, as though she was being raped. And he was like, you know, and so when he seen she was getting all excited, he ran out of the elevator. But ultimately, they caught him, and the whites, naturally, they wanted to lynch him. And so the blacks in town, you know, brothers, they went and they got their guns, and they came down to the jail, and they said, ain't nobody lynching nobody. That what's going to happen is Dick is going to go to court, and he's going to stand trial, and he's going to have a fair trial because he didn't do anything. And so even the white female realized that he had just tripped and fell into her. So that infuriated the whites that were there. And so many of these whites were like ex-military men. And when I say military men, I'm talking about lieutenant colonels and generals and stuff like that, people that knew military strategy. And so what they did was, over the course of those few days, they put together a military strategy to destroy Northern Tulsa. And so they set up Gatling guns at the top of hills. They got their crop dusters, and they were dropping bombs from the dynamite from their crop dusters. And ultimately, they destroyed the Black Wall Street. And the thing about the Black Wall Street, now, Richard Rowland ultimately was acquitted because he didn't do anything. But there were many people killed, like around 300 people were killed, and 3,000 were taken into custody by the so-called deputized white KKK that were there. And the destruction of the Black Wall Street led to some other things. So I'm going to turn it back over to Marvin, you know, so we can go further into the program.
Thank you, brother. Black Wall Street, our highest level economic success in America, in my mind. And so we have to continue to model those things and moving money in and out of our community amongst ourselves. And that's part of the NAAE is economic development and looking at how we can continue to learn how to manage money and understand those principles that will lead us to success. We're talking reparations, and I'm certain that if we got money today, we would spend it and give it right back. We have to become fiscal managers of our resources. I want to go back to one thing that you said earlier about Willie Lynch. So that's a part of the education and cultural piece in this production that we're doing. But I want to speak to Willie Lynch and his book that George is reading from as we initiate the shows, and that is Willie Lynch, Why African Americans Have So Many Issues by Mark Sims. So pick that up if you can. Take a look at it, because he is telling you what it is that's going on. And we know that we are victims of white supremacy, right? And so there's some things that we need to think about as we continue to kind of peruse this thing about what we need to do, because we are divided. And so that the policy of dividing conquer is still active. We have to do a better job of recognizing that and then come up with solutions in our community about what we need to do. So you're listening to NAAEA Community Conversations, Part 7, What Slavery Did to Us with Brother George, the effects of the economic collapses. So we're going to transition into the Roaring Twenties. What you got for us, brother?
Well, the Roaring Twenties were a period in history of dynamic social and political change, to say the least. For the first time, more Americans lived in the cities than on the farms. The nation's total wealth more than doubled between 1920 and 1929. And this economic growth swept many Americans into an affluent but unfamiliar consumer society. People from coast to coast bought the same goods thanks to the advertisements of chain stores, and people began to listen to the radio, which was a new thing that everybody had in their households at the time. And through the radio, it caused a massive cultural change within this country. And one of the things that it did was it gave whites the opportunity to be exposed to the black community without anyone knowing, because nobody knew who you had on your radio while you were in your car. And it brought about, you know, a change within females. It brought about a change within the culture overall. And so I'd like to send it back to Marvin, you know, at this point.
Thanks, George. We're talking about success here. So when we're looking at African-American success, and as we continue to go through our history, success for us means looking at what happened in our past to understand the things that we could do currently in our future, and combining elements and creating systems that work effectively for us. The thing that we have to do is understand what these things are that our ancestors did that made us successful, even during the time of segregation and Jim Crow and all of those things. We still found ways to be successful, and we have to continue to do that. Brother George, let's go to the New Woman and tell us more about that.
Well, brother, the New Woman is a concept. It's one of the cultural changes that I spoke about that the Roaring Twenties brought on. The most familiar symbol of the Roaring Twenties is probably the flapper. They're talking about a young woman with bobbed hair and short skirts who drank, smoked, and said what might be termed as unladylike things, in addition to being more sexually free than previous generations. In reality, most young women in the 1920s did not do these things, though many of them still adopted the dressing styles, and they might have drank and smoked, which was something that women didn't do. Also, a huge change during that time period was the 19th Amendment, which guaranteed women the right to vote. Okay, so millions of women worked in white-collar jobs and could afford to participate in the burgeoning consumer economy. Now, they also came up with pregnancy drugs to keep women from getting pregnant. And so women started having less children. Up to that point, you know, you might have had 9 or 10 kids in one family. Now you're getting into a generation where you have maybe 2 or 3 children. And so that's less mouths to feed, and it's more money for the basic household. Now, the thing with the reason why I mentioned the New Woman and a lot of these effects were more affected the white female than it did blacks, it still affected our community. These things were still things that happened to black women. And just like you said, not all women, you know, became sexually free and all of that. But a lot of women changed during that time period. They were changing their dress and they got away from the long, you know, schoolhouse looking dresses to the shorter dresses that showed from their knees down, the skirts that you see in the older movies and things of that nature. And so this time period was a time period that changed the way that life was for women in America forever.
Wow, so let's examine the cultural influences. And we know that with social media, right, the television, the radio, entertainment, our people are being influenced. So we can see that early in this culture as we move more toward being integrated in the culture. So this thing started out being mental and physical with slavery. Now it's more of external and mental. So we have to examine that. Let's talk about the Jazz Age.
Yes, sir, brother. Well, you know that all of these things, when you talk about the 1920s to the 1930s, you're talking about the Harlem Renaissance era. And a part of the Harlem Renaissance era was this, the Harlem Renaissance can in some ways be defined as an attempt at cultural fusion between the arts, meaning that the way that blacks and whites could identify with each other, because at this point it was mostly blacks and whites that were not identifying with each other, through the arts, through music. Like, you play jazz, I play jazz. Or you paint paintings and I paint paintings. Maybe we can see some kind of way that you and I can communicate through the arts instead of trying to communicate through the cultural living class that we live in, because you're poor and I got money, so we can't relate when it comes to that. But if I'm an artist and you're an artist and we start talking about painting, maybe we can relate to through those things. So when you talk about the Jazz Age, you talk about there was a tremendous amount of jazz artists that were coming into fruition at this time. It's just like, you know, with the hip-hop era, where you had all, you know, a bunch of young black men that wanted to be rappers, right? Now, in this era, it was a lot of young black men that wanted to become jazz artists because they were cool. People wanted to see them play that instrument. They was, you know, they were loved, you know, around the world. And it kind of disassociated us from the poor living conditions that we were in and the poor conditions that we were in as a group of people. It kind of separated us from that. The same way that people talked about, you know, when you talk about Michael Jordan, well, in Spike Lee's movie, he said, well, Michael Jordan is not a nigger, you know. But yes, he was, as far as y'all's definition, but he was saying, no, he's Michael Jordan, you know. So it was the same way with jazz artists. They looked at them in a different way than they looked at the rest of our people. And so it was something to aspire towards. And so many of our people were into jazz. And so as a result, once again, like I said, the whites were very much influenced by jazz. They loved it. And they used to go to the clubs so that they could listen to it, like the Cotton Clubs and different places like that. And this era was the hugest era of the jazz age, was in the 1920s through the 1930s.
I think as we continue to go through this series, we'll see how our impact here has really looked at how we have affected the culture here and how we continue to move across the landscape of America, impacting how things are happening in this country and how our role in this country, from building it to influencing culture has really made a significant impact and difference in this country. The last thing is we have to identify the importance of culture and develop institutions that define and create our own reality. Let's move to the Great Depression and the New Deal.
Well, the Great Depression is a sad time in this country. The Great Depression was the worst economic downturn in the history of the industrial world, lasting from the stock market crash of 1929 to 1939. The Great Depression was the worst economic downturn in history, and it lasted from 1929 to 1939. It began over the stock market crash of October 1929, which sent Wall Street into a panic and wiped out millions of investors. Over the next several years, consumer spending and investment dropped, causing steep declines in industrial output and employment as failing companies laid off workers. By 1933, when the Great Depression reached its lowest point, some 15 million Americans were unemployed. Nearly half the country's banks had failed. Now, what caused the Great Depression was, the Great Depression was caused by, throughout the 1920s, the United States economy expanded rapidly, and the nation's total wealth more than doubled between 1920 and 1929, a period dubbed the Roaring Twenties. Now, what happened there was that because of the Industrial Revolution, which took place from the 1860s all the way up into the 1930s or so. Now, they were constantly creating ways that machines could do things that human beings traditionally were doing. So what they did was they did something called, they didn't consider human intensive technology. When you consider human intensive technology, that means you can't outgrow your human population and human need to be employed. You always have to create another technology that can employ those people when you're putting them out of work of doing something else. So what happened was the economy outgrew the skilled labor. It wasn't that the people weren't there. They weren't skilled to operate the machinery that these people had invented between 1860 and the 1900s. So what that did was all of these people are putting their money into the market so that something they could get a return on all that. And so it just outgrew it. And just like they said, the economy doubled, but at the same time, they weren't able to fill the orders. And so when you can't fill the orders, that means that you got a huge backlog. And so what happens when you get a backlog? People start talking about, well, I ain't buying from them no more. You know, it's like you could break things down to a more simpler understanding of things. And so you basic supply and demand. If I got like a supply of 50, but the demand is 100, and I don't have the skilled people to produce that other 50 quick enough, then that means that I'm going to lose a bunch of money all at once. And that's a huge amount when your needs are 50% over what it is that you're producing. And so it threw the country into a depressive state.
Wow. So how do we deal with the shifts in the economy? And you know we've always been resilient. And so we have to continue to find ways, even though we're dealing with a pandemic right now, we have to continue to find ways to be resourceful. Let's continue to pool our money together. Let's continue to become economically sound and structured that no matter what shifts the country go through, we're able to manage that thing together. You're listening to NAAEA Community Conversations, Part 7, What Slavery Did to Us, the Economic Collapse or the Effects of the Economic Collapse during this period of time, and how this is affecting our people and what is happening during this era. So we're giving you a tutorial on what is happening as we move through the American landscape. And Brother George is doing a great job of providing us that information. We're going to move now to crime during the Great Depression. What do you have for us, brother?
Well, the crime during the Great Depression is actually I was supposed to talk about the New Deal because you told me to talk about the New Deal. I'm sorry. I apologize, listening audience, for Scoot. Now, what happened after the Great Depression came was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, for the first time in the history of this country up to that point, black people traditionally voted Republican. Now, that's hard for us to believe right now because we're not back then. So Franklin Roosevelt, after the country went into a depression, the Republicans, as they are today, they didn't want to spend any money to try to get the country out of the problems that it was in. But Franklin Roosevelt said that he could get the country back on course. And as a matter of fact, Franklin Roosevelt was so impressive that he put together such a good plan for this country that this country elected him, and he would have went for a fourth term, from my understanding, had he not died in office. But Franklin Roosevelt was the reason why they created the rule that you could only serve president for two terms. The next president that came in, which was a Republican, immediately changed that after the Democrats held the office for 12 or 13 years, and he changed it so that it could only be for two terms. Now, one of the things that Franklin Roosevelt did was he created a lot of different agencies. He created the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is the FDIC, which protects your money when you put your money into a bank. And you'll see that FDIC sign on the outside of your bank. He also created the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is a way to regulate the stock market so that they won't get into a situation where they have too many orders and not enough supply to put the economy into a situation like that. He also created what they call the Tennessee Valley Authority, which was authority that built dams. And those dams that they built were for the purpose of electrical power plants. Nowadays, we're trying to use solar energy as an electrical power plant. Back then, they used the water, the dams. And also, he created the Works Process Administration, which created 8.5 million jobs between 1935 and 1943. When the Great Depression began, the United States was the only industrialized country in the world without some form of unemployment insurance or Social Security. Now, this country right here was the only ones in the world. That shows you how backwards they was back then. So in 1935, Congress passed the Social Security Act. So many of you know what the Social Security Act is today because the Social Security Act is for the purpose of unemployment, disability, and pensions for old age people, meaning that even if you don't have a retirement plan, you still can get Social Security because you paid into it over the course of your working life. Now, Marvin moved me into the age of crime in the during the Great Depression. Now, I know a lot of y'all seen Elliot Ness, and y'all seen the G-Man and all these different FBI movies. Well, that was the time of the gangster, Al Capone, and Legs Diamond, and Pretty Boy Floyd, all of these different people, and most of them were in the business of alcohol. They sold liquor. Now, what happened with the alcohol thing was they passed prohibition, okay, which prohibited people from making and purchasing alcohol. They didn't stop. They didn't say you could. They didn't say that you couldn't drink it. Now that to me don't make no sense. But they just said that you can't produce it or sell it. So that's why when they caught them in the clubs drinking liquor and stuff like that, they couldn't lock the people up for drinking liquor. They could only lock the people up if they caught them making it or selling it. So they was acting like they were giving it away, you see. But a lot of those big-time people that were making all that money from the stills and important liquor from Canada and all of this money that was being made from that liquor, you know, was made by those gangsters and by those syndicates that were put together by those different organizations. Now, some of them were in, you know, ultimately got into gambling and prostitution and a lot of other things, okay. But for the most part, they were into selling alcohol. Now, the brother asked me to speak on, The brother asked me to speak on the effects of the depression on African American people. And so what the effects on it was for us was it was doubly bad, you know, for us. You know, I mean, we had lost the Black Wall Street, we had lost our financial, you know, base, and you know, we was in a terrible situation. But one of the bright spots of that time period was despite these obstacles, Roosevelt's Black Cabinet. So he had put together a Black Cabinet, and amongst his Black Cabinet was Mary McLeod Bethune. And so Mary McLeod Bethune, what she did was she did some things to take advantage of getting Roosevelt to hire more Black people in government. And then that way we could take advantage of the Social Security Act and different things like that. And she tripled the number of Black people that were in government. So we did benefit to an extent. And that was the effects of the Great Depression on Black people.
All right. There you have it. Another community conversation with Brother George. Part 7, what slavery did to us, the effects of the economic collapse here in America due to the Great Depression, and how we continue to work through that. The NAAEA is the New Deal for African Americans, where we begin to work together collectively, creating jobs and opportunities for our people. Remember the 5 areas: politics, economics, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. And this is a component of the culture and education program. We want to thank Brother George for coming in and doing the series with us. Continue to listen to the series. Join us on Saturday for the Empowerment Saturday, NAAEA program with the Empowerment Network, 2 p.m. on Saturday. Share it with your friends. We're working to improve our community every day by doing the work of working on ourselves, creating opportunities for ourselves, by ourselves, and with ourselves. Continue to be the best person that you can be and join us on Sunday. Next time with Brother George, we'll be in there talking about those things that can get you to thinking about what we need to do to move forward. Thanks again for all that you do. Thanks for listening. And again, Brother George, thank you so much. Peace and prosperity to you, my brother.